All right. Welcome, everybody. It is the It's Nasty podcast. And guess what? It's Nasty Bob. And I've got two amazing guests with me today. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Don Rhines, also known as Rhino, former roadie. I guess that's what we're here for.
Yeah, we're going to talk about stories on the road. And who else do I have here?
Jeff Nienthal, roadie for what, like 85 to 92, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, roughly around there.
Rock and roll.
Rock and roll. That's what we're going to be talking about. I found two guys that were roadies back in the day, back in the 80s and 90s. And we're going to just kind of go down how this started and some interesting stories, because I think it would be kind of cool to find out what happens behind stage and what, or should we not know? Maybe that's what, it's always been a secret. But we're going to release some of those secrets today as best as we can. So, Jeff, how did you get in, like, how does one become a roadie?
Well, it was absolute luck. Right place at the right time. I was, believe it or not, I was laying block on a Saturday afternoon in Waynesboro with a buddy of mine. Friend of mine used to be the light man for the Kicks. I said, "Hey, Bobby, Kicks are playing Shally Acres tomorrow. Get me in," which was a Sunday. They were always on Sundays. And he stopped and he looked at me and says, "You play drums, right?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "We need a drum roadie." And Monday morning, I was on my way to Cincinnati. I think it was Cincinnati.
Just like that.
Just like that. I packed my bags and left.
Oh, my goodness.
Knew nothing about what was going on or when I was coming back.
And what did you do before?
Masonry, construction work.
Construction work? Like
that. Yeah.
And play drums on the side just as a fun hobby thing?
Yeah, just picked up bands and singing and drumming and just bouncing around from band to band.
And next thing you know, you're heading to Ohio.
Yep, and it was my first gig. Absolutely nervous, knew nothing. Sitting in a van with a Kicks band.
And a set of drums, I guess.
No, they were behind us.
Okay. So at least you weren't all crammed in there.
No, that was the Blow My Fuse tour.
Oh, okay.
That was one of their bigger albums.
Right, yes.
Yeah, they did very well with that
album. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it went platinum.
Yes.
That album, yes.
Wow. And you
it
were...
It took us 35 years to get a platinum album.
Yeah, it only took 35 years for them to give us a platinum record, but we just got it. Actually, 2 years ago?
Yeah, about
like
2 years
ago, we finally got them.
Oh, really?
For platinum albums.
So they retire, and you got your platinum album.
Yes, we did. And it was a surprise. I liked it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So where do you have that hanging?
In my living room.
There you go.
Yeah, right in my living room.
So is that your only records? That's
my only
official
album that any band has ever given us.
Really?
Yep. All the bands we work for.
So, Rhino, how did you get in on this?
Well, me and Jeff, longtime friends. We grew up together.
Mm-hmm.
Neighbors, two houses apart. And like I said, I used to, his mom had a dog grooming business. I was laid off from, it's now called NVR, but it was Ryan Holmes down in Thurmont. I was lounging around on the couch. He called me. He says, "Hey, what are you doing? Come up here for a minute." So I went up. There's this him and his tall blonde-haired guy, Bob Daniels, Yo-Yo. He was the Kicks' road manager. He says, talk to me. He says, "You want to be Ronnie's guitar tech?" I was like, "You kidding me?" He goes, "No." He says, "Need a guitar tech." I said, "I'm in." So the next thing I know, we're set up at Zellinger School, Zellinger Community Center rehearsing.
Yep.
Because my first show was the, I think it's called the Convention Center, Atlantic City.
I can't remember that
big
one.
Place, because it was actually even a Westwood One recording that night.
Okay.
Yeah, now I remember it, and that was a good one.
So it was like, my first show was like a big show, don't mess it up, and all this stuff.
Uh-huh.
I mean, and of course, while I'm standing there, we're all done loaded out, drinking a beer. I didn't know I wasn't supposed to drink for 2 weeks on the road. Yo-Yo, our road manager, told band management I had a beer problem. I had a drinking problem.
Oh, no.
So I'm standing there drinking a beer with the crew and the guys, and here comes Joe Gerber. He was one of the Kicks' managers.
Okay.
And he come down. He always carried a wiffle ball bat.
Really?
Yeah. And he says, "What are you doing drinking beer?" I said, "I'm having a beer." He goes, "No, didn't Yo-Yo tell you? No beers. 2 weeks." I said, "What's that all about?" He said that you like to drink. I said, "Yeah, doesn't everybody? Everybody here drinking."
Right.
He says, "You're on like a 2-week probationary period." Well, I got kind of pissed. But I went along with it. I did my 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Stuck a couple here and there on the bus.
Yeah. And Joe Gerber and that baseball bat, he never hit me with that baseball bat. I think we'd have.
Who's the one that told you, says, you hit me with that bat, I'm going to shove it up your ass and make you look like a popsicle?
I didn't see it. Joe Gerber, he was a manager for
Twisted
Sister.
Uh-huh.
And he was one of the ones, you see him in the courtroom scene with Dee Snider when they were doing the
parental advisory,
stuff. You see Joe Gerber there
in
that picture. And he'd come on, just, you know, he fluffed his wings a little bit and thought he was going to tell us rednecks from Waynesboro what we're supposed to do. It ain't going to happen.
If you watch the new Dee Snider biography on A&E right now, Joe's in there.
He's in it. He don't look good.
Really?
No.
Okay.
Oh, well.
I'll have to check it out. So did you play guitar, or yes. Is that okay?
Me and Jeff used to jam around in the garage.
Yeah, so you guys were like the garage band. So yes, you had the drums, exactly. You had the guitar.
Yep, that was it.
So was there other people in your little garage band, or was it just you guys just jamming in?
But he jammed more than I did. I wasn't very well proficient.
Yeah, we would just get a guitar player heard about us.
We'd play Electric Funeral for an hour and a half.
Exactly.
For Black Sabbath.
Yeah, Black Sabbath for an hour and a half. over and over. It was fun, though. I mean, we were, you know, we were
something to do.
Something to do.
Yeah. I mean, you weren't getting in trouble.
Right.
Right.
You know, that what we did when I went out, that was more or less a bar tour. We did a lot of bars.
Uh-huh.
You know, we did, like, the Channel in Boston. But they were big bars. Of course, Hammerjack's. That was the biggest place.
Oh, yeah, down in Baltimore.
We'd sell it out. And when we played there, when the Kicks played there, it was 3 days in a row.
Oh.
You know, and then it was boom, 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 which was nice because we could leave our gear set up. And we could actually drive home and stay at home for a couple nights.
Yeah.
You know, and that made it nice. And we would always do the holidays down there, Halloween and Christmas and New Year's was huge.
Uh-huh.
You know, and they made huge money then. And it was always packed.
Wow.
But then, you know, I was out with Kicks for about 2.5 years. And then we got hooked up with the
Brittany Fox guys.
The Rat Tour.
Yeah, you did that.
It was
come after that.
Kicks opened up, and then Brittany Fox, and then Rat.
Uh-huh.
Well, I became friends with Johnny D, the drummer from Brittany Fox, and just a heck of a nice guy. He's there from all out of Philly. They were like a Cinderella type.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, times. I'm familiar.
But, I became friends with them. Then when the Kicks went off the road, Johnny needed a guitar or a drum tech, so I thought, I'll call Johnny, and he picked me up. So that was awesome.
Because usually when you come off a tour for your bigger band, they'll give you a per diem, so you stay loyal to the band, and when you're ready to go, you go. Or like when Kick's case, they had a recording studio up in Waynesboro called Guido's,
uh-huh.
And I was back and forth getting stuff out of storage units and taking up for them. Donnie would call, go get this, or management would even call. So go get this, bring this. But they wasn't paying us.
They wouldn't pay while
we were off.
Nothing.
They wouldn't give us our retainer fees, what they call it.
Okay.
So Jeff, he went up, and one night I'm standing in Pap, I think it was Bob's Hideaway at the time.
Yeah.
And Rhino, phone call. I go, it's him. It's Jeff. He goes, hey, did you get your butt on the train tomorrow and get your ass up to Philly? I was like, what? He says, Mikey Kelly Smith, Brittany Fox needs a guitar tech.
Off we go.
And there you go again.
I'm walking around Bob's Hideaway. Hey, can you run me up to train station Harrisburg tomorrow? Can you run me up?
$33 from Harrisburg to Philadelphia. I did that trip many times.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, old John Hartman, he ran me up to there.
And we went back and forth with those guys. And then their first album did very well, you know, with the girls' school and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys were an absolute joy to work with. The nicest mm-hmm. guys you could ever work. Never complained. Always practical jokes, all this and that.
Didn't treat the crew like dirt.
Didn't treat it. They treated us great. What do you want?
Like equals.
Yeah,
so exactly. Was that like one of the best bands that treated you well?
Absolutely.
Out of every.
And Tesla. Tesla, their band and crew was great.
Their band and crew was great.
But we did. The Kicks did the double header tour. It was us, and then the double header part of it was Tesla and Great White. And then they'd switch. One night they'd open, then the next night they'd open, but back and forth.
Uh-huh.
But that was a fun, that was a pretty fun tour. That was a show, I'm a Tesla freak, I love Tesla.
Uh-huh.
I didn't miss one show. Usually you're tired of it after 45 shows.
Yeah.
I never missed a show.
So you still was out there just...
I was right out there. Those guys, Troy Licata, he let me do his sound checks for him, playing drums, and I got to play with all those guys.
Oh, wow.
And I sang for him one time and did some stuff. And
I know, I did sound check. I always did the guitars because our other guitar tech, Brian Pumphrey, he couldn't play guitar. So I'd have to play both guitars.
I would think that would be something that you would need to have to be a guitar tech.
All you gotta do is make it work and tune the guitars. Yep. That's all you gotta do.
Make sure you plug it.
You don't have to play.
Really?
Yeah.
So you just need to be able to plug. So I could be guitar tech?
If you know what you're doing.
How to tune it, string it.
How to tune it and string it.
I don't know that part. So maybe that's not a way for me.
Yeah, it was. That was a very fun tour.
I used to sound check for the Kix guitars before Tesla and Great White, and I'd always pay black and black. Back in black.
And I was playing the drums on that one.
And I'm saying, what the hell? Here comes the rest of Tesla out. They played Back in Black with me.
Oh,
and
really?
To play it in one of those Coliseum type. It was awesome.
Oh, my gosh.
And of course, our sound guy, Guru, did not have the video camera on.
Oh, no.
We take Kix videotape every show. Every show is videotaped. There's got to be thousands of VHS tapes.
And that's no lie.
Oh, wow.
And then they make us watch it right after the show every night.
See what messed up. Oh, you missed the lighting cue. You missed.
So it was like almost like football. Like you go back and you run the tapes. And
we didn't like it. We didn't want to watch it. We were there.
Oh, well, that would be, I would think.
And I think it was Donnie mostly wanted that.
He's
very, everything had to be choreographed perfectly.
Uh-huh.
You're supposed to be on your knees at this part, but that's what they do. That's why they watched it, for mistakes and stuff like that, which I understand, but we did it every night after. I was like, oh my goodness.
I always thought you could have just like picked every, so often. I figured right afterwards, you guys were done, wanted to get packed up.
Blazing Saddles on. We watched the hell out of that.
Yeah, we watched that a million times. And Steve Martin's.
The Jerk.
The one where he did the stand up. Steve Whiteman liked that one a lot. He loves Steve Martin. He could do Steve Martin.
So between the tapes and then it would be some type of a movie?
Drinking.
Well, of course, drinking, yeah.
He did it.
Extracurricular activity.
I didn't watch a lot of movies. Let's be honest, we partied hard.
Yeah.
I mean, me and him one time, we said, this is going to be the tequila tour. So it was nothing but gallons of tequila, and that's all we drank. Of course, we had a lot of blow.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all free.
Well, it was the 80s.
And it's free. When you're on the road, people want to give you stuff. They want to be your friend so they can get backstage and meet the band. And we do that kind of stuff, help people out. Of course, But always, not everybody.
I always had two cases of beer in the bottom of my bunk.
Always.
My bunk was slept on the bus. I always had two cases of beer at the bottom. I slept with my feet propped up on them.
Always. We never ran out.
So they don't drink our beer.
We never ran
out. So you had your own stash.
Yeah.
Oh, that's smart.
And then one time we were over in Europe on the Alice Cooper tour, and they thought this was funny. You take a piece of tape and you make a circle out of it so you're hanging a poster on the wall.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Dean Davidson, the lead singer of Britney, called me back, and no, it was Johnny, called me back to the back of the bus and wanted to tell me something. So they're sitting down there telling me, well, Dean Davidson's putting that duct tape all over my pillowcase, inside out, all rolled up.
Uh-huh.
So I finally crashed and passed out and woke up just knots of duct tape all through my hair. And
he
we had
pissed.
Nothing to get it out. And he was chopping it all off with scissors.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was freaking out on these guys, screaming and hollering. And they set me up again. I went, after they cut it all out, I rolled right back in it again.
No.
Dean was a prankster.
Oh, Dean was the best.
Yeah.
I left. We went partying. We were in Germany, and we went partying. I do not know.
In Brussels.
Yes. In Germany, the ceilings are real high in these really old hotels. They're beautiful old hotels.
Uh-huh.
And for some reason, I got my own hotel that night. Wasn't it our own? Or I don't know if we split it or not. But we all party and everything. We come back 2 o'clock in the morning, and there's a ceiling fan 10, 12 feet in the air with everything I own from my suitcase duct taped to the blades, just spinning around like crazy. He had to have gone to management
and
get a ladder.
Yeah.
And tape everything, just laughing.
He had a trail coming in the front door with guitar picks, disposable razors, this, everything out of our shaving kits and stuff.
Just
opened up the bathroom door. The shower was on high hot, and he got a plant out of the lobby somehow and stuck in the bathroom. That big ass plant.
Yeah.
It was a big ass pot of plant sitting in the middle of our bathroom.
Right in the middle of the bathroom.
Oh my God.
And they take your wallet, steal your wallet, and just submerge it in a Tupperware bowl and throw it in the freezer overnight.
Oh,
and
no.
You just got a block of ice with your wallet on the inside.
Oh, my goodness.
He carried like a tackle box, too. It had fishing line in it and them lead sinkers, weights for fishing stuff, and eye hooks. And he'd rig it up down the hallway across the top. He'd put these eye hooks in and run that thing down and hang that weight down in front of your door and pull it so it can knock on your door and pull it back up.
It was constant. It was constant jokes.
So did you ever like get him back? Did you ever like, or did you just
watch when you get the boss back? You got to be.
That's what I would think.
You got to ease into that one. Yeah. But he was a good guy. I keep in touch with him. I talked to him it was probably been about a year. I talked to him on the phone, mm-hmm. and he lives in Arizona somewhere. I'm not sure exactly, but that was during COVID, and he didn't want to go out, you know, because of COVID and everything. We never met up, but you know, I was staying with Chris Branco. That was another band we worked when Britney Fox broke up. They became Black Eyed Susan. Dean Davidson started a band called Black Eyed Susan.
Very good band.
They were, I don't know why that never exploded.
Should have been big.
Dean was a lead singer and guitar player, and then he had Chris Branco playing drums. Chris went out and played with Doro for a while, but he pretty much had to live in Germany, and he didn't want to do it. So when Britney Fox broke up, Johnny D took his place in Doro. Johnny's been with Doro 25 years.
Oh, probably 30-something.
I mean, wow. He's still with Doro. And when they did M3 last year, Johnny got us the tickets and VIPs and everything. Uh-huh. He went down, and we haven't seen
That's
each
first
other.
First seen him in 35
years.
And
it was awesome to meet up again.
Wow.
And he had to jump on a plane and leave right after the show from Germany, do the show in M3, and then fly back home.
Oh, my gosh.
Germany to Meriwether to do a show and back home.
And then back home. I wish we could have spent some time. You know?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
He brought the whole family, little Weedy, we call him.
Oh,
his
yeah.
His son, Weedy. But he met his wife and everything, got to sit down, talk a little bit, but it wasn't long enough, you know.
Yeah.
After 35 years.
I think,
years.
Yeah, you need a little, yeah. you need longer time.
That was a good show. Kix headlined that one.
That was their last one, right?
No, that was the second to last one.
This was 2 years ago.
Yeah, okay.
That's 2 years ago.
September, but they finished at Meriwether too, right?
Yeah, September last year. September. We went down to that show.
Mm-hmm.
But we couldn't even get backstage.
Really?
No. We're like out of the loop with everything. But then their excuse was they're having a lot of pyro and nobody was allowed, but the real tax.
Fire marshal had to clear the stage or something.
Yeah, but that, were you there?
No.
You didn't make it? That was a pretty good show.
It was cool because they did like a video montage before the show of old fixtures. And it was cool.
We were in a couple.
Him and Jimmy sitting there. And then there's a picture floating around of me and Brian Forsythe and Donnie Purnell in Hard Rock Tokyo. And I'm sitting there with a can of Budweiser, chugging it with no hands. And Brian's got this look like, what the hell? Why did we hire this guy? And Donnie Purnell's pointing at it. But yeah.
That was good.
It was cool just to see that. They recognized us. He gave us a nice little swag bag. It had all like coasters and shot glasses.
Autograph pictures and stuff like that. They gave us some stuff.
Oh, that's really nice. Yeah.
It was pretty cool. But, you know, that the Kix was a good thing. Britney Fox was a great thing, you know, and then. But Black Eyed Susan, that lasted, I mean, I don't even know how many shows.
We did one tour.
I was going to say, I don't even know how many shows it was.
Because that's when I left, went with the Bullet Boys.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about the Bullet Boys.
Okay.
And we were out, we did a tour
so
with Joan
So you split
Jett.
At one point.
Yeah.
You weren't guys together.
We had Black Eyed Susan and The Scream, which is John Corabi, who sang for Motley Crue at one time. And it was Black Eyed Susan, Scream, and Bullet Boys. And we was doing an East Coast run, I think it was.
Yeah.
And we got to New York, and we were back at Susan was done with the tour. Scream was staying on. But the night before the New York tour, it was Pittsburgh. And the bass player for the Bullet Boys' brother and the guitar tech from the Bullet Boys got in a fight with these guys. With dislocated his shoulder and everything.
Oh, my gosh.
And we were loading in, and the Bullet Boys' road manager come up to me. He's trying to come on the bus with me for a minute. So when these guys are in there, all beat to shit, bruised up, black eyes, he says, you're done with this. What are you doing after? I said, well, we're going back to Philly and unload the truck and go home. He goes, you want to continue on with us? Because we got to send him home. He's got a broken shoulder and all that stuff. He can't do anything. I said, okay. So I jumped on the bus, took my stuff off of one bus, put it on another bus. Plus, it was like the day before my birthday. They were supposed to have a party for me out of Crackers when we got home.
Uh-huh.
Well, I wasn't there.
You weren't even there for your own birthday.
So I went with them guys in down through Florida, across Texas, not to California.
I just think it's incredible how they're like, oh, hey, do you just want to go on this? You just want to go? Like, they're just like nonchalant, it seems like. I would think there would be more of a procedure or...
Back then, we just wanted a body that knew a little bit of something.
Is that what it... I mean? Yeah. Nowadays, it's probably
boys,
not.
They were really fun to work with.
Oh, yeah. They were good guys.
They were good guys, and they were good musicians. And, I mean, when they put on a show, it was loud. And they were dead on every night. They were...
Really?
They did Money, Money, Money. I loved that song. And I mean, they F had sharp some nine. Really good. And I kept in touch with Jimmy the B-Boy, too.
Yeah, I still
he
talk
was their
to
drummer.
Him.
And that boy,
Mark,
he came out and played naked one time.
What?
Fully naked. Then he started out with a kilt, and the kilt's off. I cracked up.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I was in Arizona. It was Ricky Rackman had the Cat House.
Okay.
And he also had a knockoff in Arizona in Phoenix called Cat House.
Uh-huh.
And we played there.
Yeah.
And he pulls up in this flamed out BMW and stuff, blue suede shoes. And Jimmy come out ass naked at the end of the show, standing there with just a towel on his junk. And
oh
I turn around and laughing, you know, stomp my foot right on Ricky's foot. He goes, man, quit stomping on my blue suede shoes.
Oh, Jesus.
But yeah, I like that tour. That was fun. The Joan Jett tour wasn't too bad.
That was a good one.
But Joan, you couldn't get near Joan. And
really?
She had like two bodyguards or something like that. She'd say hi, but that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
But the drummer was Tommy Price.
Okay.
From the Billy Idol.
Okay.
And he was freaking awesome. He was sitting at the bar at the hotel one night. I just went up and sat down beside him, and I thought I'd buy him a shot, you know, break the ice and everything.
Yeah.
And the shot glass, they didn't have bottles. They had this, like a fountain drink. You squeeze it with a fountain drink,
uh-huh.
And whiskey came out of it. And then he said, I like that thing. So we kept filling them, and we started a tab, kept filling them. And at the end of the night, we were going, man, I hate that thing. We got hammered. And I mean hammered. He goes, you want me to get a town car? I said, I ain't paying for it. So he got a town car. We went to more bars.
Oh, my gosh.
We came back. We met up at the bar, that hotel bar, to pay our tab. And we're looking at close to $400 on that freaking whiskey.
Whiskey.
I was like, oh, my God, I do hate that thing.
I would say so.
Tommy, I still keep in touch with him. He was a really good drummer.
Yeah.
And he was a really good guy. They were a good band.
I think that was the night me and Kaz broke in the DJ booth.
Yes.
It popped out. It had a file cabinet. It was albums, of course, at the time.
Uh-huh.
We popped this lock off of it, and we just started
spinning records.
You became the DJ.
Hotel manager says, how'd you guys get in there? I said, we can get into anything.
But, yeah, that was a fun. That was a bar tour also with the Joan Jett tour.
Yeah.
But it sold out everywhere we went. I mean, she puts on a good show.
Yeah.
Good.
And we got to work with Claire Brothers. Well, Bick was on that tour and everything. Yeah. Those guys are, they're one of the biggest PA companies, I guess, in the world now. Aren't they based out of York?
Up there with Lidditz.
Yeah, they make their own everything, and they're just huge.
But I can't
stand
listening to Joan Jett anymore.
Nah,
really?
Yeah.
I was going to say, is there an artist now that you just heard so much on the road that
Great White.
Great White?
Yeah.
Just can't.
They have their sound man. It was Tesla sound man. No, who was it?
Is that blonde hair boy?
Scoville.
Yeah.
He's Kenny Chesney sound man now.
Oh, is he? He's good. He was good.
He's big time.
Yeah, he was good.
But he said, I think he was doing Alice Cooper. It was when we were in Europe. And he says, they're about as much fun as watching paint dry.
Yeah, that's when everybody went to eat when Great White was doing their
sound check. Oh, really?
Doing their sound check.
Go to catering and eat.
Go eat.
They were boring.
Really?
Mark Kendall. And
I talked to him still on Facebook.
Yeah, I talked to him. He's been doing good. He's got about 8 or 9 years sober. He's doing real good, becoming
nice.
Family. Then they're still playing, I guess.
And that was funny too, because we did that doubleheader tour, and it was funny because we had to share showers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He'd always go to the shower, towel wrapped around him with a freaking black hat on. Because him and Jack Russell had hair weaves. They had hair extensions.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know if he was completely bald or he had bald top, but he'd wear a shower. He'd go to the shower. He'd come out of the shower. Had the hat on. And he'd always say, hey, Rhino, set me 2 Heinekens down here behind this bush around the corner. Because
they weren't allowed to drink.
Oh, okay.
And some bad problems. And the same when we went out on a rat tour, Robin Crosby,
uh-huh.
The one who passed away, I hid his Jack Daniels or wherever he's drinking that day in my road cases.
Really?
He'd knock on the door. He'd call me little buddy. Hey, little buddy, give me my whiskey. And he was 6'6".
Yeah. Oh,
my
gosh.
He was a giant.
The wow.
King. They called him the king. He was so cool. And, I mean, he was married to Tawny Kitaen there for a while.
Okay.
He's on, like, the cover of their first 2 albums or something.
Yeah,
like,
he was. Yeah, she was. Yeah. And then Bobby Blotzer became good friends with him. We used to call each other on New Year's Eve every night. At stroke of midnight, I'd give him a call.
Really?
And that lasted for maybe 4 or 5 years, and then I tried to call, and it never answered, so I kind of gave up.
Aww.
Bobby was a good guitar player, too.
Uh-huh.
He was endorsed by Yamaha, so he had Yamaha drums,
mm-hmm.
and he had this acoustic guitar. And we were all in catering one time, and he comes around the corner of you there, and he was singing and playing the guitar, walking around like, he was entertaining everybody. I said, I didn't even know you play guitar. He goes, I play everything. And he was really good. He was a really good guitar player. And then, of course, Warren DeMartini. That guy was just.
And every time we rolled in with kicks into Los Angeles in the bus, first one called Stephen Piercy.
Yeah.
He wanted Whiteman and us to come up to his house in the bus.
Yep.
Bring the bus up. Come on.
Stephen Piercy was a good guy, too.
Yeah.
He was a real good guy.
Aww.
And he put on a good show, and he sang. I love Rat. Rat's got some great songs.
Mm-hmm.
We were on the Way Cool Junior tour, it was called, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Or that was the album.
You guys were. I'd have missed that one.
Oh, okay.
I come in at the end.
But, yeah, that was a really, really good show. But then it started to fade away for some reason. And then we were playing 12, 13,000 seat arenas.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went into the last couple shows, and then the back line curtains would be closer and closer to the entrance. I'm like, you could park 10 buses where they, all these seats.
Yeah.
I'm like, what's going on here? They went, ticket sales.
Oh, wow.
Ticket sales. And it got down to like 4,000 people were going to show up in these arenas. And then they just, they were done. Yeah. I think I did 53 shows with them.
Now, what would be a typical, like, show count for
tour? If you would do, like, the Giant Center in Hershey, that'd be a good show. See, 13,000,
yeah.
13,500, something like that. That'd be a great, you know. I mean, that would be your average people. But, of course, you got bigger bands that are.
Like we did 13 countries in Europe with Alice Cooper. Brittany Fox, it was Brittany Fox, Great White, Alice Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
We did 13 different countries. We had way before the Euros. We had to change money 13 times.
And I still got it all in a glass somewhere, all that change.
Really?
Yeah.
Jeez.
But having Alice's snake, when he took the snake on tour with him, somebody would always have to act like, because you're going through different countries, you got to pull your passports out. And sometimes the police would come on and they'd shine flashlights. If it's like 2 in the morning, they just want to see a body in there. And sometimes you just have to show your face.
Uh-huh.
And then there'd be a roadie all curled up with that snake, because that's absolutely terrible. You can't take snakes to different countries and stuff.
Yeah.
And everybody was hiding with this.
I think sometimes we got certain places he had to get a pet store to bring in a snake.
Bring in a snake, yeah.
Really? Because, yeah.
I mean,
but
to do that.
About, you know, capacity sizes for shows. Like, Cooper's big over there. I mean, we did Wembley Arena.
It was awesome.
Wow, yeah.
I mean, I just imagine standing on stage at Wembley Arena doing sound check with, I don't know what that was, 20-some thousand?
Yeah, maybe. It was pretty big.
Yeah.
And not every night, Cooper, I was in the pit, and he was up in the lighting room. Yeah, he ran follow spot.
I've ran a follow spot. One of the old days where everything's on, you know, everything's clickety-clickety-clickety.
Yeah, now
it's all remote.
Computer.
Back in those days, you had a guy climb the top and adjust every light by hand, laying on your stomach 30 feet in the air.
Jeez.
And then the follow spots, you had to climb up that chain
ladder.
You know, I grabbed a glass Gatorade bottle to pee in if I had to pee. Never had to use it. And then run the follow spot up there. Nobody wanted to do it over in Europe, and they paid me $120 a night. I said, I'll do that every night.
So you literally would climb up there and they stay up there for the whole show.
The whole show.
And then
follow
around.
You have your headset on. You have like 5 different colors, and the lighting guy would tell you exactly what to do and when to do it and when what to change and all that. It was simple. It was the easiest money I ever made.
Wow.
2 hours.
That'd be about half lit by the time he came down.
I was going to say.
But, man, I did that every night. I was like, yeah, I'll take $60 an hour.
I wasn't
in the 80s.
Well, yeah. I would have done that, too.
And then we did an off show one time with Diablo. That was pretty cool. You didn't do that one?
No, that's when you did with Clive Burr.
Yeah, Clive Burr, the original drummer from Iron Maiden.
Mm-hmm.
And I was his tech that night. It was another band of Joe Gerber's, because Dee Snider was the lead singer of Diablo. And we went to this bar, and I am not exaggerating as I sit here.
Mm-hmm.
It was 104 steps straight up. 52, a 4-foot by 4-foot landing, 52 more steps. And then you got to the bar. That's, we carried that gear up them whole steps.
Holy crap.
Up and down. And
okay, first, did you count those steps? How did you know they were?
Did count the steps.
I was like, how did you know that they were 100 steps? So many times.
100 times.
You were wondering.
And it was just a little tiny low roof, you know, like 8-foot ceiling. And it was really weird shaped. It was an L-shaped club. And Dee Snider, he put on a good show. Diablo never went anywhere.
Yeah.
But I got to work with Clive Burr. And then he ended up dying of leukemia. And I have a drumstick and it with a nice little note on it and some pictures. And I've gotten offered big money for that drumstick. I said, I'd never sell that drumstick.
Oh, I bet so.
You know, he was only 52, 53 when he died.
Mm.
He was unbelievable. I mean, the first 2 or 3 albums of Iron Maiden, that's Clive, and he was good. Mm-hmm. I mean, to fill Iron Maiden shoes, that's some pretty big shoes.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So what kind, do you have, like, some memorabilia that you, like, you just mentioned that one. Is there anything else that you have that you will, like,
I have a Scandinavian, 1989 Scandinavian Alice Cooper poster I got framed. I would never get rid of that.
Mm-hmm.
I sold my Kix Japan because do you know Mark Olliman? He's got one of the biggest Kix collections out there, I believe.
That's why the name sounds familiar.
And I put a price on it, and he wanted it. I said, you're probably the only person I'd sell it to. And because he deserves it.
Yeah.
You know, he deserves that because he was doing merchandise. Him and his wife, Jerry, did merchandise for the last couple years for the Kix.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got an unbelievable collection of stuff. He bought the old scoops, the old PA scoops.
He bought these
road cases, stuff. I mean, it takes up a lot of space.
Yeah.
To me, I ain't worth that. You know what I mean? But he wanted it.
I wouldn't think the road cases, like, I don't know what.
And you should have seen.
Beat up.
Rick Parks, who has Maryland
Institute.
Uh-huh. He's done them Kix auctions when the band's done with Steve and Jimmy.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe the money.
That money, it went big time.
I think at one night I counted $57,000 for Steve in like an hour or so.
Harmonicas were going for close to $1,000.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, he did well. I'm happy for him.
Yeah.
You know, he did very well with that. And Jimmy did well also. There was no way I would have bid. And they
have the Kix Fest coming up in October out at the Moose Club grounds in Waynesboro.
Yeah, I'm going to be vending out there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But they're still working on getting the Blues Vaulters out there, Ronnie's band.
Okay,
so we'll see if that works out.
That would be cool. But
yeah, that would be real cool. Yeah. This is our first one. You know, I think it's a lot to do with the Facebook page.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, just Kix Fest. Kickstand Fest or something.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot of stuff. Of course, the platinum record. You know, a lot of collection of drumsticks. I got a lot of drumsticks from picks. Bands.
Yeah.
So you have a pick collection?
Yeah, a good bit. I mean, I have some that, you know, I didn't acquire on the road, but people give them to me, or I ask for them, they'll send them to me.
Okay.
And I got a bunch of European tour posters. I think you offered me money for a couple of mine one time.
Yeah, I like posters. I got room to hang them in that school. You know?
Oh, yes, you do.
I wish I would have saved more. Like, I got from Japan. We went to Japan with the Kix. Mm-hmm. First time ever in 1989. And everything I got, I think I got one flyer. I had a little flyer that you used to put on all the seats. And they come out with a tour book, like a tour program.
Uh-huh.
It's a big color. They put our names in there. He used to be the gapper, because they always talk about Metro Gap.
I had a lot of friends who lived in the Gap.
Okay.
So they just ended up being the gapper or plowboy.
It was Jeff Gapper, D. Thought was it in the...
was it in the book?
Rhino Rhines.
And we got our names in the Blow My Fuse album. We're on that. We're in that.
Oh, really?
Crew. Yeah, okay. That's pretty cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, I mean...
Black Eyed Shoes now.
Black Eyed Shoes. It's little things, you know.
Yeah.
Some, you know, it was... I wish I would, like you said, I wish I would have kept a lot more. I still have a banner from Osaka, Japan somewhere.
I got one.
Tucked away.
From Tokyo.
In Japan, they brought banners. Everybody... Well, not everybody, but a lot of people bought really beautiful hand-painted, and they would hang them all over the place. And our last show there, we hung every one of them up that the fans brought on behind the backdrop.
Uh-huh.
And that looked really cool.
Oh, wow.
And that was a good tour, too. That was 2 weeks. The
Japanese crew made us lazy. Because we were there for 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
I forget how many shows we did. But as soon as we got off the plane, which we were half hammered,
because it was a
14-hour flight.
Oh, so
we drank
the plane. I think there was one beer left.
Oh my gosh!
I guess what the stewardess said.
Yeah, you can't do that anymore.
Yeah, no, I think they probably
smoke on the plane then.
Yeah,
but we get off, get in this van, we get to the hotel. It's like, all right,
the Roppongi.
Yeah,
every band stays at the Roppongi. It was beautiful.
Oh,
Kix
really?
Was like the Beatles. We got off the plane and the. Or Japanese interpreters, whatever, were there.
Uh-huh.
And hundreds of kids, hundreds of girls screaming.
Really?
So who the hell are they here for? You guys. I was like, get the hell out. I was over there screaming and stuff going on. They hung out. There was
followed you everywhere.
At the bottom of the hotel, you know, driveway, telephone pole. And 24 hours a day, there'd be at least 4 or 5 girls.
They weren't allowed to go anywhere, go past that.
They hang
what
out.
Was it? What was it? Productions. What was the guy's name?
Udo
Productions.
It's like the Japanese.
Every 2 weeks, he flies in a new rock and roll band. Every 2 weeks, the Bullet Boys were coming in when we left.
No.
What was it? The Bullet Boys.
They were leaving as we was coming in.
That's right. They were leaving every 2 weeks. Udo Productions, and then the last night.
Jet Boy was there because they came to one of our shows.
Yeah, they treated you like royalty. And then the end of the tour, we were invited to Mr. Udo's place, or it was a restaurant or something.
Mm-hmm.
And oh my God, it was incredible meal.
When we got off,
I mean, the shoes off and then sitting on the ground, and we drank gallons of everything.
When we got off the plane and got in the van, went to the hotel. We had Yo-Yo, our tour manager,
right,
and Japanese tour manager. He said, take your stuff up to your room and get back down here in 15 minutes. I was like, what? I said, we just flew 14 hours. We had rehearsals. We went to this warehouse. It was like refrigerated and all this stuff. It was the cleanest warehouse I've ever seen in my life.
Uh-huh.
They had our gear set up.
We didn't have to touch nothing. Just adjust a little thing.
All that,
really?
A couple adjustments. He did that all the time.
All he had to do was mark the stands with tape. And they would set them up right there. And all I had to do was go in and plug the cables in for the back of the amp, take the guitars out of the case. I was done.
And then we do a little bit of tearing down. Certain things I put away. You know, I didn't want it broken.
Right,
But they were very good. And then they drive off. We never see it.
They
rode on that bullet train flying from Tokyo to Kawasaki, Japan. And 220 mile an hour on that thing.
Osaka and Nagoya.
That was freaking awesome.
Wow.
That's what I wanted to tell about my...
I knew once we got together, we'd figure, because we put both heads together, we'd start remembering more stuff, you know?
Or my Osaka story was me and Jimmy Chalfant, and I think it was Guru. We was out, that was our sound man. We was out hitting the towns. I think we had the day off the next day, and we was getting lit. And we went back to our hotel, and it had a huge revolving door. I mean, it was a big one. So me and Jimmy get in there, and we get that thing cranking. We get it going. We're running. I dive out. I knew when to dive out. Jimmy goes to dive out. Bam! Gets his head caught in the door.
Oh, no.
Oh, and it was those things are heavy.
I thought he was done.
Oh, I guess so.
He rolled on the floor, and he laid there. And he got his shit together. He finally came out. You all right, man? We went upstairs to the rooftop bar and kept on drinking.
Oh, my gosh.
But that was funny as hell. I still laugh about that.
And that freaking night, we went to that one bar. And he said, what's your imports? He started drinking wild turkeys, and he started a table. He didn't realize that imported wild turkey in Japan was $11 or $12 a shot.
Oh.
And he drank like $125.
Oh, my gosh.
They gave us a little bit more money because we were in Japan because the yen didn't match the dollar.
Yeah, they paid us out. It was like 550,000 yen or something.
Yeah, we thought we were freaking rich.
Well, yeah, I guess so.
Everything's cost 8,000 yen or whatever it is, you know, it goes away pretty fast. You had to watch your money.
Yeah.
And he ended up hooking up with that comedian Yahoo Serious back in the 80s.
Young Einstein, or maybe Young Einstein.
Yeah.
Yahoo Serious. I ran into him at a club and I drank with him all night.
Really?
I was partying with
And this was over in Japan?
He was over there promoting the movie. The movie just came out.
Okay. Wow.
And then I
was taking a piss beside him. I said, are you who I think you are? He goes, well, who do you think I am, mate? He's Australian. I said, y'all, who are you serious? That'd be me. I said, we're getting drunk.
That was funny. And then, what was the guy's name? The Gong Show? A host? What was his
Chuck
name?
Barry.
Chuck Barry, his daughter. We hung out, ended up. It was her. We hung out with her for a little while.
So yeah.
Your dance, rap. Chuck Barry, she was promoting rap over there.
Okay.
She was a pain in the butt.
Really?
Yeah, she's a little weird. But she was cool. And we did. That was fun over there. That was really good.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, we didn't have to unload trucks. We didn't have to load trucks.
The food was delicious. I mean, that was some real, real Japanese food.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was
There's fun. Even, if you go on YouTube, do Kicks Japan 89. There's a whole video that some production crew followed us around. And just in between songs, I'm in one or two scenes. I think you're in some. And Guitar Tech Richie, Brian Pumphrey, he's in some of the scenes, and they interview the band stuff. It's pretty cool. I got it on DVD, too. I bought a bootleg on eBay.
Really?
Yeah.
But the best one was when he put on a diaper and put his hair up like this in a like the man bun looking thing, but sumo wrestler, put those glasses or something on, and came out on stage as a sumo wrestler. I pissed my pants.
You did that this?
That was freaking awesome.
Okay, in Japan?
In Japan. And I thought, we're going to get in trouble. Somebody's going to say something about this. He came out on stage doing this white big towel. Old belly hanging on with a white towel on. I was like, oh, my God. Glasses. It was freaking awesome.
Was this just a dare, or you just drunk. You just felt like drunk? That wild turkey?
It was just... We have to do this.
Do something.
We got to do this.
Steve laughed.
Oh, Steve lost it. He lost it. Steve has a great sense of humor.
I can't. Yeah. I'm glad he does, because I'm feeling that wouldn't have went over so well.
Oh, great.
Oh, Steve. When it's stuff like that, he loved it. He just loved that kind of stuff. But that was down there.
We were talking about.
I'm seeing it now.
And the audience was okay with it. They didn't.
I don't know.
You know what?
You know, it's kind of like that. They love that stuff, you know. And that's kind of like their heritage. Blah blah blah. And
yeah.
You just making fun of it. I don't know how that went.
Yeah. The Japanese crew standing off the side of the stage, they were looking at me like, "The hell is he up to?"
Oh my God, that was hilarious.
About memorabilia, we got to meet Lemmy one night while we were in London on the Alice.
That was awesome.
Oh, wow.
Was really the nicest guy.
It's like, I don't know if it was an old hotel or what. It was called Sam Ritz.
And it's so small. Stone walls painted. I mean, you bang your head if you're 6 feet.
Oh,
you
wow.
Bang your head in the ceiling, and you might, what, hold 45 people?
Yeah, it wasn't big at all.
That's it.
And I have an Alice Cooper laminate. And we're getting ready to go, and I went up to him. I said, Lemmy. He goes, yes. And he looks down and he goes, Cooper. He says, you tell the Coop I'm still an ugly bastard.
He's just the nicest guy.
He signed my laminate, and then either somebody took it or lost it.
Somebody stole all mine up in Boston.
Oh,
I had
no.
My briefcase open, power laminates from all my tours. I shut it, came back, opened up, they were gone. Those years, that bummed me out. I bet so. That was a big bummed out. But I got some, you know, down the road, but. I mean, all my Japan and all the Europe and all that, they're gone.
I think him and Alice Cooper and George Lynch are the only people I ever asked for autographs, I think.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever asked for too many. Clive Burr, I wanted that one.
So when we played the doubleheader tour with Tesla, Kicks, Great White, at Irvine Meadows, it was like, I don't know if you're familiar with like Circus Magazine, Hit Parader, the old music magazine.
Yeah.
We played there, you go backstage, it's like somebody opened that magazine. Ronnie James Dio, George Lynch,
all them
guys are back there. They were cool as hell. You know? I didn't feel like asking for autographs. I didn't bug them. We just talked, drank, move on to the next guy.
Sitting down, I sat down with Tommy Lee and Heather Locklear. Yeah. We're sitting there drinking Heineken's. And they are the nicest people.
Yeah.
Heather especially. I mean, Tommy's got a big heart. Really big heart. I mean, Gene flew around the corner one time, bumped into Gene Simmons. And I spilled my beer, and he went, slow down there, little fellow. And I took off. I was working.
That's another thing that pissed me off. It was Brittany Fox, and they come out with their second album. We were supposed to open for Kiss.
Yeah, open for Kiss. How cool would that have been?
Oh, my goodness.
We were supposed to open. It was all set up, and ticket sales weren't going. I just read this article not too long ago. Ticket sales weren't doing good, and Slaughter just released Fly to the Angels or whatever. Never played one single live show, nothing. You know, they were put together, factory band, Danish Drum, Mark Slaughter. And they kicked us off the tour and put Slaughter on.
Oh, that would have been awesome.
To boost ticket sales. Still pissed to this day, because I'm a big Kiss fan, a huge Kiss fan.
Yeah.
I've seen him many, many times. And I was like, man, dude, whole tour, Hot in the Shade. I did get to go see it up at City Island, but that was... One of the bummers.
Yeah.
One of the bummers.
There was some good. There was some bad, but there was a lot of good. We had so much fun. I mean, there was, of course, some things just didn't go right. You know, that's just the way it is.
Well, yeah.
We were playing, like I said, we played that place in Boston called The Channel. We were getting this buzz through the PA system. We were with Kix one time. We were getting this buzz. Just annoying. Couldn't figure it out. So most of these bigger clubs have an electrician that stays there. If there's any problems, he can fix them for you. He came in and he goes, I know what to do. So we go out in the parking lot, and I followed him out in the parking lot. And he got this grocery cart, and he takes a ground wire and just bolts this ground wire to this grocery cart and then throws it into the channel, into the water. And the buzz
went away.
It grounded itself.
It grounded it out.
What?
Never saw anything like that in my life.
That was hilarious.
Well, that's pretty cool.
I was like...
I would think that would have caused some more problems.
No, the buzz went away. Everybody happy. And then something.
That is very something. Yes.
I'll never forget that.
Yeah, but you went on that old 1969 tour bus using the rider truck with Richie. I
think. Yeah.
We had this kickstand. We was going out to start the doubleheader tour in Concord, California. And we left Hagerstown or D.C. somewhere. No. Yeah. And we had a nice bus when we left. We get to Indianapolis. That's when we had Ronnie Portilla, I think it was.
Yeah.
And we pull into this truck stop. And we're sitting there. And finally, we ask the bus driver what's going on. He says, bus company's taking your bus.
Or you didn't pay the bill.
Management didn't pay the bill.
Yeah, didn't surprise me.
So,
oh my gosh,
they're bringing you another bus, though. I said, this ought to be good. Well, this bus pulled up.
It was Dolly Parton.
It was Dolly
Parton. Was it Dolly?
It had Dolly Parton plaque in the back lounge. It had leopard skin pillows and stuff in the back and all that stuff. And it was a piece of shit.
Oh my gosh.
The air conditioner didn't work half the time.
I was in the rider truck driving the gear. Had AC.
So you were good.
As soon as we got to the hotel in Concord, California, we didn't even make it in the driveway. That bus broke down. And they must have paid the bill because then we got that black bus.
Yeah. We had some nice buses. They are nice when they run.
Yeah.
You know, there's tour buses nowadays. But the tour buses nowadays are just,
well, yeah, they're
five slide outs.
Yeah.
Prevos. $1 million.
You see them ones up there at the Godsmack show. That's the first I've seen a bus in a long time. I was like, holy crap.
They came a long way. They're beautiful.
Yeah.
And they all got their own buses.
I know. They did. That was incredible.
That was a great show.
That was.
That was a great show.
Yeah.
I was really impressed with that. The lighting and everything about it, the sound.
Everything. It was just awesome. It was intimate. As they kept saying, it was going to be like an intimate show. And yeah. I felt that way. Mm-hmm. You know, I felt like it was just incredible. The storytelling and the music.
Oh, absolutely. I checked a couple shows with Shannon.
Oh, yeah.
And it was with Rathchild.
Okay.
Rathchild opened up the Kicks a bunch of times. We played City Island. Those guys, they don't care. They didn't care back then.
Just want to play.
Is it in tune? Yep. I mean, they were writing their set lists. They were taking, like, your guitar strings come in these little envelopes like this.
Mm-hmm.
They would just rip open the envelope a little bit, and they'd find a Sharpie, and they'd write the list on it, and just duct tape it somewhere. We'll wing it. I don't know what we're playing. I've seen Shannon pick up. He didn't have a drumstick, would be busted. There's a pair of pliers, and he would hit with a pair of pliers to finish out the song. Okay. He did not care. Their gear was beat up, but oh my God, were they good. They were amazing, and I'm telling you what, they just did so well for themselves. And now look, you know, Brad Divins is doing unbelievably well, and Shannon.
Shannon, Godsmack.
Terry Carter, I think he's playing country music, isn't he?
He's playing with Pat Benatar Tribute Band, Florida.
Okay. I don't know what Jay's doing.
Jay's still in Virginia somewhere. And, of course, Brad Divins, he's sound man for Disturbed and
Garbage. Enrique Iglesias.
No.
He's in big demand, too, because he just signed contract with Claire and all
that. Claire Brothers, yeah. And he's got that Fixing to Get Mixing studio that he does a lot of stuff with.
Uh-huh.
And he did, I think he recorded Steve's album.
And he did Steve's
You're Welcome.
And did Bob Parise's sons, Nicholas, did his.
Yeah, okay. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And good, he Nicholas. Also did the DVD for whatever the Kicks put out, that Rock Your Face Off or something. They put out a live DVD or something.
Yeah.
That
he's Brad good sounding. He really is. But yeah.
Them guys are good.
You said Japan had the best. Was there, like, with the catering and all the back behind the stage, was there something that was just weird or...
Mystery meat trays every freaking night.
Deli trays in the.
Or just a deli tray.
Really? But you didn't know what it was?
Oh, yeah, it was. By the time you got to it after the show and everything, it's been laying there for 8 hours outside.
What time would you guys eat? Like, how did you?
When you did a big tour, you did. When we were out with Rat, it was breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And then when you were, they kind of like if when you were in the north and New York and blah, 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 it was Italian.
Mm-hmm.
And when you got to the south, it was tacos and. You know, Mexican food and stuff like that. Because when you were always in the South, you seemed like you ate better.
We got New Orleans with the...
New Orleans with the...
Gumbo.
My God. Stuff like... It all depends on where you're at.
Uh-huh.
Where the food was good.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? But if you're doing a bar tour, like the band would make a rider, the bands usually never ate. The bands...
So why do they make these riders when they don't... Like, with outrageous stuff on it?
I don't... Maybe because if they're to reading in the contract. Well, we only asked for... We were only allowed. We got a case of beer a night and...
Yeah, so you guys had like a rider yourselves for the crew?
No. Food, we'd get a buyout. We get like $25.
Yeah, we get something. But usually I'd make a sandwich before we leave and, you know, grab some whatevers. But usually catering fills you up, but you're drinking.
And you play Lemoore's in New York. Always count on Zeedee.
That's always Zeedee.
Zeedee
and Lamores.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we'll talk about that. Should we talk about that story live? That still haunts me.
Oh, no.
You guys still are live.
No, we will forget. We'll forget that one.
What? All right. Well, maybe next time.
Yeah. We get in trouble. Because you never know.
Yeah.
But the good thing about Lamores was we always knew the guy up there with the brown paper bag because he had everything you needed.
Oh, really?
What do you want? And he'd have a brown paper bag. What do you want? Just chop it up, man. Just chop it up. We're snorting it.
Oh, my gosh.
Man, we had all. We did it. We did so much.
Christ Management come in the door. Where's the blow at?
And then
so it was everybody, anybody. Everybody.
You walk around, crumbs coming out of your nose. I mean, that's the way it was. That's just the way it was.
Yeah.
I won't shy about that one because that's just the way it was. And in Philadelphia, it was crank.
Ugh.
Yeah, that stuff burnt like crazy, but it worked.
Oh, wow.
It worked. But, yeah, we had a lot of fun doing that. I mean, we were 25 to, like, close to 30, you know, when we were doing this. So, that to me, that's, like, peak
hungriness. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And we did.
Yeah.
That's what we did.
Yeah, I mean.
Got in a lot of trouble, busted up that one room on Thanksgiving. Me and you and Johnny throwing them freaking chicken wings and over Thanksgiving weekend and.
Where was that?
Was that in
Amsterdam?
That was in New York.
We spent one Thanksgiving in Amsterdam because me and Dean went to McDonald's.
No, it wasn't that one. But it ended up being like $1,600 worth of damage. Everything was busted. Holes, TVs, yeah, every towel rod, everything. Because our rooms were joined. Remember, the rooms were joined at a 45-degree angle. And their window was here and our window was here. And we ordered 99 chicken wings.
Why 99?
That's the highest you could go. They wouldn't sell you 100. It was 99 chicken wings. And everything between, we only had from here, you know, 5-6 feet to the next window. So it was back and forth, just everything we could throw. And in the chairs. And
did you eat any of the chicken wings?
I think we ate them first.
Okay, so this was what was of the boat. Okay, I just make sure you weren't throwing good food.
Everything that was mounted on the wall had to be busted. And now, if it wasn't nailed down, and then we ended up sleeping there and ended up getting up, and then we went to the gig the next day, and the cops were there. Well, Richie, our road manager, I told Ron, I said, he ain't gonna like this. So he went over, and then we had a meeting, and you know, they took it out of our per diem to pay him back. And they didn't take all of our per diem because we had to live, too, you know.
Right.
We had to pay everything.
Was in on it.
And the band was in on it also, so that didn't give us, you know, Johnny was there, and I don't think Dean was there.
Mm-mm.
But we had a couple guys from the band that were involved, too. So if it would have been just roadies, we'd have got a flight home.
We'd have probably been done. Yeah. But since it was all of you guys.
Yeah, well, exactly.
There you go. So was that the like the most damage you ever did?
I think that one, that out of pocket, yeah.
So yeah.
That's the one we got caught.
No.
Yeah, that's the one. We didn't do the
TV. So we don't want to talk about the other ones that didn't.
We didn't do the TVs out the windows and all that
San
kind
Diego
of stuff.
Launching ashtrays out the hotel window on
with
the highway.
With those balloon launchers out the highway.
The balloon launchers?
Yeah.
Oh, them things are sale.
Jesus.
One guy on each side of the window at the hotel. And
pull that rubber band back, launch them things for 100 yards, they would sail.
So you guys didn't have any like hobbies on your downtime. It was just drinking. Destruction?
Drinking and days off, we'd laundry. You know, a day off, we got to do laundry.
I mean, we did Tesla at one time. The guy opened up his water park for us or whatever.
Yeah, he opened up the whole park for everybody. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, wow, that was really nice.
Got a keg of beer.
And then they went and got a huge catered meal, and then we all went back to this like pavilion type thing and sat around, told stories, and there must have been 60 of us there. Because he brought his whole family.
Mm-hmm.
The owner said, I'm bringing all my whole family. He had to introduce and everything.
Yeah.
That was a good time. We had fun with that.
Well, that's cool.
And stuff like that. I didn't do too much. You know, a lot of, you know, go to the mall, get a cab ride somewhere. Usually we go see a band in a local bar and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
He carried me across two lanes of highway when I had a cast on my leg.
My hobby was to see how many gay bars I could get him to go in.
Without him knowing that they were gay bars? Right. Okay, all right.
I'd ask the guys there. We wouldn't have any beer on the bus. We'd drink it all or something.
Yeah.
We'd done the show, and I'd ask the guys around the security bar. I said, where's the closest gay bar? He goes, I said, it's just a joke. And I said, come on, let's go get some beer. And we'd walk in. He goes, you son of a bitch.
How many times did you fall for that?
A lot.
A lot?
I was like straight and narrow, drunk, went into this gay bar one time. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But
right.
So I'm at the urinal. I'm peeing away, drunk, trying to stand up, hand on the wall. Dan Pellucci comes around, grabs me by my waist, picks me up. Pee flies everywhere. Don't you know where you're at? We're getting the hell out of here. Pee just flying everywhere. So we got out of there. That was the one that scared me. I was like, I thought I was going to be killed because Dan was big boy. He picked me up. And
yeah.
He's out. I don't know who he's out with right now. He's doing a big stadium tour.
Oh, wow.
I don't know who he's out. He's a truck driver now. He's busy.
Okay.
And I think he said there was 48 trucks.
Trailers?
On tour. It's big. I mean, it's like Taylor Swift type big. I forget. It's a country.
So you got 40 couple tractors.
Yeah, it's a big tour.
That's yeah.
Big. We had 28-foot rider truck.
Yeah, right.
that was it.
Sometimes just a rider truck. Boys and us were in the same truck half the time.
Yeah. That was the Black Eyed Susan.
Yeah. But I mean, we could talk for hours because things keep coming back.
You know? Yeah, we could. We've hit almost an hour right now.
Okay.
Red Rocks was fun.
Red Rocks was a cool place to play.
I've always wanted to go there.
I took Stacy to see Dylan there.
Bob did you?
Yep. She wanted to see Bob Dylan. Said, well, if you want to see Bob Dylan, we got to go to Red Rocks. So I got on and found tickets.
Wow.
And that was the 75th anniversary. And they got a little area up there where they got it's down below a little bit where they got the plaques of all the bands that played there. Tesla, Great White. Kicks were there. I don't know if Kicks got their name on it because I don't think they got it because they were an opening act.
Okay.
So, but we got to play there. That was beautiful. Yeah, that's not very big.
That's what
really
10,000 maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just cool.
It is beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful.
That's when Jeff Keith had his birthday singer from Tesla. I had to hire all them strippers.
Yeah.
Oh my.
There's like up on the side from the stage. There's like little rooms up there and stuff. People really can't see, and that's where he had them up in there and stuff. That's such a cool place.
Oh, Tesla was just so cool.
Just getting the gear up there is a pain in the butt.
We were at a show one time, and I went down, and the dressing room was under one of the stages because the stage is so high or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to mention the band member's name, but I went in there, and he had like four or five girls all naked bent over, and he was playing their butt cheeks. And he said, you want to play? I said, I'm good.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
That's just the tip of the iceberg.
I was going to say, I bet you have more stories of things you've seen.
Yeah.
We might have to make that on another podcast.
Well, what's her face? I don't know her last name, but you know the song Sweet, Sweet Connie out doing her act? And is it Steppenwolf?
No.
Who did that? I forget. Sweet, Sweet Connie out doing her act.
Grand Funk Railroad.
Grand Funk.
Okay, yeah.
And this Connie was very famous for doing everybody. I think she passed.
Yeah.
If she wouldn't, she'd been in her 70s by now. But I landed in the stadium where she did her business in, I think it was in the South somewhere. I can't remember where. But it was my birthday. So they wanted to line me up to have her. I was like, no.
No Connie for you?
No.
No.
Nah, not from... From something that's,
I bet.
Yeah, she looked a little rough.
Oh, I bet so.
Because she was probably 50 back then, and I was 20 couple.
Oh, you know, so. Yeah.
But no, but I got to meet her.
You didn't want to be in the notch in her.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Thank you, but no, thank you.
You should have got her autograph.
I should have.
See, look, there you go again.
That's one thing you never think of when you're when you're amongst that kind of it. You see it. And you just forget.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing because you guys become, it's like a relationship. It just, you just are like, just talking. Like you said, like, you know, walked in there with Tommy Lee and Heather, you know, you were just having a conversation. It feels awkward or weird to be like, oh, even though you really might want this autograph or want it later on, be like, damn, I wish I had that.
And Ron Jeremy.
Ron Jeremy, yeah. That was at
Brittany Fox at San Diego.
Yes, yeah.
Or Keith, we had
I didn't get to talk to him.
I was like, was he your birthday present too?
Yeah, no, thank you. We had an all-state keyboard player with Brittany Fox.
Okay.
And he got struck up a conversation. Of course, Ron Jeremy had good looking women with him, porn stars.
Right.
And old Bobby Button, he asked, hey man, how can I get into porn? And they sat there and had this conversation and shit. And one girl looked at Bobby and says, you're too ugly. You'll never get into porn.
Bobby was a good guy.
Bobby was funny.
He was hilarious.
Oh, my gosh.
He was. He cracked me up.
Oh, hedgehog.
I don't know what he's doing either.
He's in jail.
Is he?
Ron Jeremy?
No, Bobby Buttons.
Ron Jeremy's
Bobby Buttons not in jail.
No. That's what Stevie said. He's still around.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't think of a whole lot. I mean, I could. But that'd be like an X-rated show.
Well, we can make that for another day. We can we can get this to a nice ending here. It's been an hour, and we can do road trip number two.
Here's my wife said, keep it clean because your grandson might want to listen to it.
Yeah, or my wife.
I think you've done very well on this one.
I think so. Yeah.
And if we do an X-rated one, we can make sure we let everybody know.
Yeah.
Or maybe tell the grandson not to listen to this one.
It's our memories, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, how can you forget stuff like that? I mean, we met a lot of cool people. You know, and that was a great time to meet him in that era.
Well,
you know
what
I mean? That was just, it was sex, drugs, and rock and roll. That was it.
You were the guys definitely living it. Yeah. That was that time.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, very fortunate. That's what I always said.
Yeah, right place at the right time
for me.
That
travel world.
If Bobby would have never walked down that alley, then it never would have happened.
I was laid off.
Never would have happened.
He called me.
What, just think if that didn't happen, where would, do you have any idea where you would
probably be? Probably still be bartending.
Probably where I'm at now for the last 30 years, Manitowoc. That's where I've been since I come off the road, pretty much.
Yeah.
Since 94.
Yeah. I went right straight back to bartending.
Yeah?
Yep.
So do you miss it?
The road?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I couldn't do it, though. Not in good enough shape. My back, I couldn't do it. It's the hours, man. You don't get much sleep.
Long days.
Long days. And you know, if I didn't have to touch a whole bunch of gear and I'd get on the bus every night. Because some of those shows, you know, I had to, like the one I had to do, we were in Colorado or something. And we did a show, and our next show was 960 miles away.
Oh, my God.
And we had to drive that and nonstop. You know, and the governor's on the rider trucks, so only go 60. That was it, pinned. And no GPS systems, so he was my co-pilot.
Yeah, with the good Rand McNally.
I mean, the Rand McNally, I still carry one to this day.
I'd get with the bus driver before we leave. I said, which way are you going?
But those buses can go 85, 90. They'll haul ass.
That's why we
can't keep up with them.
No.
You know, so, and then when you're downtown and you flip the page, find the city map. And you know, you kind of look around. He saved my ass millions of times by he'd get you right to the front door.
Get your itinerary out and find out where the hotel was. And okay, get down here.
Yep. And that's, I mean, when you're driving, you can't look at a map.
So, yeah, no.
We do lines on our freaking laminates. You tap someone on there, I'd be driving. Down the road we go.
There's well, that's how you stayed away.
And we always say, there's another 100 miles.
Before you go, why don't you give us through like a day so people understand? Because I think a lot of people, you know, when we go to a show, we know, okay, the doors, gates are at 6, you know, show's at 8 or whatever, or 7, or the opener's at 7, the main act, so forth. So we only have a plan that we're going to be there, you know, our drive time to get there. For you guys are getting there first thing in the morning from being on the road all night. So what is the process of how you do your day in order to get a show set up?
Well, we never really did a headlining act. I mean, if it was a bar.
Yeah.
But like if you're doing an arena and you're a headlining act, yes, you do got to be there first. The riggers come in, they do all the rigging for the lights and everything. That's your, they always say they're the first ones in, last ones out. That's your lighting. And the stage is next or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But then you just, everything's got a time. Like
you
have a certain sound check. If we were like when the Kicks were out with Rat, our load in was usually around 11, and a lot of places could be a union place. So some of these weird union laws, I could take the stuff from the back of the truck and stop at the top of the ramp. You weren't allowed to touch it after that. A union guy had to take it down the ramp, and then I could tell him where to put it on the stage. But some union, you could take it down the ramp and stop at the bottom of the ramp. A lot of these places were union.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not everyone, but then sometimes you could just put, you know, do whatever you wanted. But our sound check was usually when their sound check was over. When the Rat sound check was, they might be having a problem with the PA system.
Hour before doors.
And then, you know, we might not even get a sound check.
Get a line check.
Just get a line and tap the drums. Yep, the mics are working. Off you go.
Okay.
So that was the different thing about that.
Uh-huh.
And then you had, sometimes we had just minutes to get on stage, minutes to set up, and then minutes to tear down. We had so many wires, we'd just scoop them all up, take them backstage, you're back there for 45 minutes, untangling everything, get everything ready, put everything back in the road cases. Union guys, who knows when they're going to be ready? It could be midnight, could be after, push it all on the truck, and then we stack it inside the truck, and then off we go to the next show.
The union takes a break, you don't touch
shit. Don't touch nothing. If you can get in a lot of trouble. If you really? You can get fined.
Wow.
It's crazy. I mean, I got yelled at a couple times, because if you don't know the laws of what their union laws are, like, I'll just start pulling something down, and they would explode on you. What are you doing touching that? We will quit right now. Rah, rah, rah.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
It got crazy. I don't know how it's like anymore. I have no idea. That's 35 years ago.
Everything's computerized nowadays. I mean, they guys go in and chalk out the rigging points and that, you know.
It's just so nice now. So easy.
Everything's compact.
But they do still work. I mean, it's still working. Oh, yeah. You still got to carry amps and guitars.
Well, yeah, those drums. Boxes are still big and full.
I mean, some of the wireless systems they got out there for these big arenas is just amazing. It's just amazing what they're doing with stuff these days. Mm-hmm. And the sound, speakers are getting smaller, but the sound's getting better.
I always like look at those old pictures where they have the speakers that are just lined all the way up through the stage, and nowadays it's like
nice little.
You look at the soundboard; it was twice the size of that table back there, and now the guy was down seeing Wolfgang. All right, they had a big mixing console, probably 32 channel, and the opening band used that, but the headliner, Wolfgang, this guy had a subboard, a little small thing. It had a screen in it and 8 sliders. And that's all he used.
Doing it on iPads now. I went and saw 6 Whiskey Revival the other day at Foster's. I want to get him out to school. He ran sound on an iPad. So he could walk all the way around and just tap a couple buttons. I'm like, well, we were carrying just huge stuff, man.
Yeah.
And it's just nicer.
Because when Welsh Sound comes in, then they do for when we do our day before our Christmas Spectacular, they'll have their big stuff and whatever. But when he had a little iPad, too, that he could just adjust the mics and everything or whatever and everything. I'm like, that's so cool.
I talked to Mark Grove from Quick Shift. And he was, when he first kind of came out, he was explaining stuff. So let's say, you know, you play Pappy's one night and you program that in. You come back a year later and you hit that little button for Pappy's and it goes all right back to how it sounded at Pappy's the last time you liked it.
Oh, wow.
And you might be able to adjust it a little bit.
Yeah, of course.
You got a good start.
So then you're not going to do it all over and figure everything out. That's awesome.
Right on your laptop. It's awesome. It is awesome.
Until the laptop crashes or gets stolen.
You're screwed.
Yeah. I think
a lot of bands nowadays don't even take guitar amps on stage anymore. They don't take them out on the road. And I've seen Jeff Tate from Queensryche, seen him at DC Winery. They didn't have a single amp on stage. They all had Mac laptops. And they run what they call modular systems, which they could bring up. I want a Marshall amp, or I want a Ampeg amp, or I want this amp. And they dial it in and just run straight to the PA.
It's crazy.
Jeez.
And that band, the Police Tribute Band, were you there at that one at Hub City? That's what they did on their stage. Well, the bass player had an amp about this big, and that was it. That was the only amp on stage. They ran everything through the PA, and it sounded awesome. It's amazing.
It is.
The only thing Jeff Tate band hold was drums and guitars.
And monitor systems?
Probably all fit in the bay of the bus.
Monitors are absolute. It's all in your ear, inner ear monitors.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody has monitors.
That's why everybody wants to stand on the side of the stage, you know, when bands play. You're not hearing nothing because they wear the in-ears now. There is no sound on stage anymore, unless you see monitors or side fields. Very rare. Jeez. I went down to Charlie Eggers, see Chevelle. We were standing on stage, and I was like, "What the? I can't hear nothing." There was no side fields. There was no floor monitors. I had in here. I said, "I'm out of here." I went out front.
I love the side fields because the side fields sound just like you're hearing outside.
Yeah.
And the monitors will be like the vocalists and stuff. That. Like getting more guitar in this one. Things have changed.
They sure have. Well, guys, I appreciate you coming in for our first road trip, and I can't wait for you to come back again for another road trip and see where else you take us, and if we get a little nasty and dirty.
That's right.
I really do. I greatly appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
Well, no, thank you.
Should we pick up our check at the office?
What's your per diem or something?
Per diem.
I got you a case of beer outside.
Our first per diem when I was, it was $125 a week. That's what I got to live off of.
That's it.
So you really liked catering.
Now I understand why you ate the mystery meat.
That's right. Yep. $125. That's a gram of blow in a 12-pack.
I was going to say, how did you survive it all?
That's right.
You just didn't eat.
Yeah, this was cool. Brought back some good memories.
Well, I'm glad.